Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, and our special guest this week, Senator Curtis Sertel from East Lansing. Thanks for making the journey up here to world headquarters.
It was a tough and arduous journey, yes.
And you selected my favorite coffee mug here at MERS World Headquarters, which is the old banners of presidential races gone by.
Yes. Well, considering my family's long history in politics, it was good to have a mug that had good history as well.
I like Ike is on here, Polk 45 or fight.
There's Yes We Can Obama, there's Hoover, which, I mean, Lord knows Hoover was a great and powerful thing.
Nixon's the one.
Yeah, this is an amazing cup. I think I might be stealing it on the way out.
Well, we're going to have to run by security on the way out the door then. Well, we wanted to have you on here because of your position with the Senate Democratic Caucus looking ahead to the 2018 election. Before we get into any particular races, I thought you might provide us with a broad overview of where you feel like the Democrats are right now.
No, I feel great. I feel like there's momentum on our side. I think that if you look at the elections across the country, there have been 50 special elections since Trump was elected that have flipped from Republican to Democrat, zero that have flipped from Democratic to Republican. In those seats, the average is 12 points above. The Democrat has run above the Republican where Trump did. In fact, in the congressional ones, it's plus 17. Connor Lamb was plus 20. If you looked at a 20-point base where seats that Trump won by 20 points in Michigan, the Republicans would have 13 Senate seats. So, I don't think anything's off the table. I think, we're in a very good place moving forward, and I feel very good about where the Democrats are.
13 Senate seats.
Well, listen, it's more than we have now. What I'd say is that we're obviously not going to play in that many seats. But I think that if you had told me 2 years ago that majority is in play, people would have thought I was crazy. And I think that the argument can be made that it's very possible to put majority in play this cycle. And I think we have the candidates to do it around the state. I'm excited about where, Jim, David, and myself have worked very hard to put us in this place. And I'm excited where we are.
Tell us where you are right now as far as recruiting. Do you have candidates in all the seats that you want to play in right now?
Absolutely. I think we have a viable candidate in every seat, 45% and above. Whether I can announce them publicly right now, there might be a couple places where I can't yet, but I think most part we do. I think this is by far the best recruitment that the Senate Democratic Caucus has ever had. And part of that's the year. I mean, I don't want to, blow my own horn too much, in all honesty. We're in a year where Democrats are excited to run. My job's a lot easier. Mm-hmm. You look around the state and, candidates from Mally McMorrow to Kelly Rossman, Winnie Briggs, Scott DeAnda, Henry Yanez. I mean, I don't want to forget anybody, but we have real candidates in more than a dozen seats, and that's never happened before.
Of the seats that are 45% or better, it's a dozen, you said?
Well, actually, I'm actually, in the seats that are a dozen, they're all well above that. They're 47-48% seats. What I'd say is that where the Republicans in the Senate made a mistake when they gerrymandered, because obviously our maps are gerrymandered, but they drew a lot of seats in the 46-48% range to try to keep as close to a supermajority as possible. The problem with that is that in a Democratic wave year, those seats become 51-53% seats. So it actually gives me the advantage going in, and many of the seats that they could have drawn them better. I think the House maps were drawn better. I think the House map's a little better than for Republicans than the Senate map is if you actually sat down and looked at it for where it could go. I think if we get the right way with the right candidates, we have an ability to make a mammoth move in seats in one cycle.
So let's talk about some individual districts. Last week, MERS reported that Leon Drillet is not going to run for the state Senate. Instead, we're going to have somebody named Michael McDonald who is going to run.
And I love his songs.
Yeah, right.
Really, really a wonderful artist in the adult contemporary culture, yes.
But will not, not that Michael McDonald, of course, but he joins three other people in that seat. How big of an advantage is that going in this 10th district, we're talking about Cohen County, for Henry Yanez?
I think Henry's done a great job, and I think that we have by far the superior candidate. I mean, we're talking about somebody who not only has a history in the House, but was a firefighter paramedic before that. So he's got a whole history of public service in that area. He's well known in the district. He's run in marginal areas. He's won in marginal areas. You take that from somebody who's really barely known at all, except for his music career, of course. And I think that puts us in a great spot. I think if you want to see where we have the biggest advantage, the fact that in our two most Trumpian seats, in Macomb County and in the UP, we've way out-recruited them. You know, we have Scott DeAnda. I'm not sure which of their candidates there are, but none of them are anywhere near as good as Scott DeAnda in the UP. You look at this Macomb County district, we have Henry, who I think is a fantastic candidate who fits the district and has won in tough races before, and they got nobody. So I think that you put those two seats in our column at the very beginning of this process, they're in real trouble because those are the two seats where they have the biggest advantage going in terms of Trump numbers.
What's going to happen in Bay County? We know that Cindy Luzak had filed to run the Bay County clerk, but it now looks like she's going to have a primary.
Well, obviously, the caucus doesn't get involved in primaries, but I'm supporting Cindy Luzak. She's a county clerk there. She's one of the top vote getters there. She fits the district perfectly. I think she'll win the primary. I would be very surprised if she didn't. She has a really hard, strong record there. I think that she gives them a run for the money in the general. I mean, I think they're going to have a tough general on their side, primary on their side with Daly and Gary Glenn. You know, Gary just haven't moved into the district. And I think if Gary wins, there's going to be a lot of interest in this town and making sure that our candidate's well-funded. And if Daly wins, then I'm sure that Mike Green's going to have some heartburn about who he's even voting for the Senate seat. So I think that puts them in a very interesting spot. And I think Cindy's a great candidate and working hard already, and I think we'll win that seat.
It kind of goes to a point that I wanted to make, and I don't know how much this applies. Maybe it applies more to the House than you guys, but primaries. I mean, are you guys going to face primaries August 7 that you didn't think that you were going to have?
Will we have primaries? Absolutely. I mean, it's $100 to file in Michigan, and even I have a primary next year, this year. So, I mean, that happens. I mean, so yes, we'll have primaries. I think that we, you know, last cycle, Senate Democrats had a situation where we had a primary where we thought a candidate was going to win, and they didn't win. And that put us in a rough spot in that seat. You know, Ryan Fishman lost, which I think a lot of people in town thought had a chance at winning that election. I don't think we'll have anything like that. I feel very confident that with the candidates we have that, you know, if a candidate can't win a primary, they can't win in a general. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll be in good spots there. I think that they have a lot more problems on their side with nasty primaries than we do. I think Holly Hughes, John Bumstead primaries going to get nasty. I think that the Gary Glenn, Kevin Daly primary is going to get nasty. We're already seeing the Brett Roberts, Tom Barrett primary. We're already seeing negative mail. In fact, we've seen negative things being handed out in a parade. I've never seen that before. So, I mean, they seem to be a bit of a mess on their side trying to figure out who their candidate is. And that's good for us. The more places where they spend their money and bloody each other up, I'm fine with because it helps me pick up seats.
If the enthusiasm gap that you kind of spoke to earlier remains exactly the same as it is today, come November, what's your best number? I mean, what Democratic seat hold do you think that you're going to have after the election?
In a relatively fair year, we would pick up two or three seats just based on the fact that where we were and the fact that we had some bad years and some bad races run in the past. In a year that slightly leans Dem, it's four or five we would have had. I think if a big wave comes, you know, we're talking about six, seven, or eight. I'll tell you this. At six, I'd be happy because I did my job and we picked up a lot of seats. Eight, I'd be ecstatic because we had the majority. At seven, I'll be real mad that we didn't pick up that eighth one. So I'm putting myself in the position to get as close as we can to eight seats. And I think that if you had told me before Trump was elected that the Senate Dems had any shot at doing that, you would have told me I was crazy. I don't think you can do that now. I think... The fact that we're in that ball game is partially due to the work we've done, but partially due to a dramatic reaction to Trump. And I don't think that's getting any better.
Let's revisit a couple other seats that still have a little bit of question mark to them. The Muskegon seat. You mentioned Holly Hughes, John Bumstead. Who's the Dems got?
I believe at the end of the day, Colleen Lamonte will file. You know, she's considering it. We've asked her to. She's doing some, she's got some work to do. There's obviously, you know, things always have to get, until someone's filed, it doesn't, she's got to make a final decision. But I feel very strongly about Colleen. Colleen was my number one recruit there from the first day. My staff was there for Election Day this last year. I was up there a lot knocking doors. I believe that Colleen wins. And I think if you looked at her numbers when she lost last election cycle, the Senate seat is 5 base points higher than the House seat. If she just ran at her numbers there and base everywhere else, she wins. And that's in Republican year, not in the Democratic year.
It's going to be a tough one for her, though, because to be in those elections that she was in and to come so close only not to succeed, it's got to be really hard to get yourself marshaled up to do it again.
Well, I can tell you that that's true. You know, it's not that Colleen didn't tell me no the first five times I asked. but it's not just me asking. I mean, I think the people in Muskegon want a good candidate. And I can't think of very many public servants who I've ever seen that have been as dedicated as Colleen is. She works hard. She really cares about the people she represents. And yes, losing hurts. Losing hurts even more when you really, it's not just about you, but it's about the people you represent and what you care about. And so, yes, obviously, I think she was very hurt when she lost. But that just like around the country, people were hurt and scared and the things they saw. You know, I think people have used that to rebuild and to get involved and use that anger towards public service again. And I think we're seeing that across the state. So I think Colleen is almost the perfect story to tell of somebody who lost an election that really was a tough one, but fits the narrative of Democrats coming back and Democrats winning this election cycle. I think she's perfect for that narrative.
There was a clerk there in Muskegon that was being talked about. Waters, Nancy Waters, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that a no-go?
Nancy informed us in January that she wasn't going to file.
Okay. And then another race, the 12th district. That's the Marlowe seat that Tedder and McCready are going to fight over. Are you guys going to have a good, credible candidate? And if so, who?
I think we do. You know, Rosemary's a hard worker. She's a business person. You know, that seat is another seat that Trump did very poorly in. So I think that's real. And I think having a small business person on the ballot versus somebody who's been in the House and has a record that is not exactly moderate will be good there.
As we're looking at the map, is there a district out there that maybe we haven't focused on that is one just to keep an eye on?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things we haven't talked about. I mean, in this conversation, I mean, obviously, you have the ones where the House members are running on. I'm sure you've done a lot of stories on Kelly Rossum, but I think that she is a perfect candidate for that seat and has a really great opportunity to win. Mallory McMorrow, who might be one of my favorite people that I've ever met during this process. I mean, just a crazy hard worker. I think she's going to beat Marty Nolenberg. I think she's the perfect candidate for this year. And, you know, running a restaurant takes a lot out of you when you're trying to run for office at the same time. So, I think that we have amazing potential around the state, and we'll see what it translates to.
The 7th district, that's the Patrick Kolbeck seat. Is there possibilities there, even though Laura Cox looks to be the candidate for the Republicans?
I would say this. I think that Laura Cox is the best recruit that they have in any of their races. I think that it's very, you know, she is obviously formidable. She's got a strong name. That being said, that district is trending away from Trump, and she might get picked for LG at the end of the day. I mean, so we'll see what happens there. So I think that Dana Polanyi is a really good candidate. She's a teacher. Dr. Kader has raised $90,000+, so he's real. So it's not that we don't have a decent candidate on our side, but I will say, I mean, I will fully admit that that is a place where their recruitment was good. I don't think you could say that a lot of places.
Let's just kind of focus again more broadly here as we kind of get away from these elections. Well, no, before we do that, is there any other incumbent? You mentioned Marty Nolenberg. Any other incumbent that you think maybe?
Well, I mean, obviously Margaret O'Brien's in trouble. I mean, I like Margaret. We worked together on a lot of issues, but, you know, she won by 60 votes last time, and Hillary won her district by 10 points. Sean McCann, who lost by 60 votes last time, is running. He seems more fired up than last time. He's got a strong record in the district, and he hasn't exactly watched her votes in some things. I mean, voting for guns and, you know, pistols in preschools in Kalamazoo probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think that's a difficult seat for them. And although I respect, you know, Margaret a lot as a legislator, I think that she doesn't necessarily vote the way her district would like her to, and we'll see what happens. But winning by 60 votes in 14 is a lot harder than it's going to be in 18, I can tell you that for sure. I think that, the Zorn seats, Bill Lavoie is running. Bill Lavoie, you know, obviously lost last time, but he's another one of those people who's making a comeback. He's already out there knocking doors. He's already out there collecting signatures. So, I mean, it's a different kind of Bill Lavoie than we saw last time. He's definitely not going to take anything for granted. So I think that's certainly a possibility as well. You know, I mean, I think that's probably where our best options are right now. Saginaw is always possible just because of the base numbers, but I think Ken has worked pretty hard up there too. So we'll see where that goes. But I think that's probably what we're talking most.
When you're looking at some of these close districts and you're trying to figure out what message the Democrats can offer to independents? Is there one that really cuts right now this year? Maybe yeah, more
roads.
So?
The roads are the roads are speaking for us. Maybe through Braille as you drive through them. I'm not really sure. But what I would say is that it's a very simple to me how to win this election. What it basically comes down to is everyone in the state is paying more in taxes, and what are you getting for it? Are your roads fixed? Is your kid's school doing better? Can you afford to send your kid to college? And the answer to all those questions is no. All those things have gotten worse under this governor and this legislature, and they raise your taxes on top of it. What are you paying for? The whole point of voting Republican is the least that they'll give you a break.
Any issues the Democrats need to stay away from?
I think that every race is very local. The way you don't have to stay away from issues is by recruiting candidates who actually believe the things that a district believes.
But the economy's getting better, though, Curtis. I mean, you can make that argument that under Snyder, the Michigan's economy's gotten much better than the Granholm years.
Well, first of all, thanks Obama, and which I think that's an easy answer. But I think in reality that is a misnomer. Yes, certainly the unemployment rate's down. No one could argue that. Problem is, you got to work two jobs to actually make ends meet. The median income is the exact same place it was a decade ago. The rich, those in power, have certainly gotten better, but the average person's life hasn't gotten much better. The food bank did a study. Food Bank Council did a study where they actually looked at sustainability in Michigan. And it's gotten less and less every single year, what basically it would take to actually raise a family. And 50% of the population is below the actual sustainability range now in Michigan. This is the conversation I have with Senator Shirky, who I have an enormous amount of respect for all the time, though, but in committee. You know, he looks at the economy and says, well, why are there so many people still in these social welfare programs? The answer is they can find a job. They just can't find a job that actually pays for the actual way, the needs of actually living. You can look at all the metrics you want, but I don't think Michiganders feel like their lives are significantly better. The other thing I tell you is you look at the polling, and they think the economy is better, but that's not their number one issue. Their number one issue is roads and education.
Now, what about, and I want to touch on the gun issue too, because in the past, the Democrats have done a pretty good job of jumping on the issue right after an incident has occurred, but when it gets to the election year, they kind of run away from any type of gun control argument. Do you see that happening again this year?
I think there are definitely seats where guns are going to be a big issue. I think that if you look at Kalamazoo, I think that guns are going to be an issue that entire election. I think you look at Northern Oakland County, that's a place where guns are going to be an issue. I think that the average voter in those areas like that, they don't want to get rid of the Second Amendment, neither do I. They don't want to get rid of all guns, neither do I. But they don't understand why someone should bring a pistol into a school. They don't think that should be legal. They don't think that it's such things as banning people that have had domestic violence or sexual assault or on the no-fly list. You know, the fact that you can fly Southwest, but you can't fly Southwest, but you can carry a Smith & Wesson into a school doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think that there will be definitely places where we'll use guns to our advantage and have that discussion. Because I think Michiganders are sick of some of the things they're seeing.
All right, we're going to switch gears here a little bit, John. Last week, we saw some polling from Marketing Resource Group. For the first time in this cycle, an independent poll has Sri Tanadar over Gretchen Whitmer in a poll. It's 21-18, so again, small sample here. But interesting dynamics. If you're Gretchen Whitmer, is it time to push the panic button? Is it time to go airborne?
No, it might be time to start thinking about doing some introductory advertisements as far as her candidacy and sort of decreasing the number of people who don't identify her name and increasing the numbers of people that do. I don't think I would panic yet. I think she's still got the strong institutional support she needs to get the nomination at the end of the day. But, you know, never say never. I mean, I always go back to that story about Larry Owen, who walked around the state convinced he was going to be the nominee, and lo and behold, primary night, it wasn't him. So it can happen.
Well, and I'm also interested in the polling from MRG that showed her running third place in the primary behind Sri Tanadar and Abdul El-Sayed in the city of Detroit. Now, she's moved her campaign headquarters there, and so you would think with Mike Duggan's support and her spending more time down there that those numbers are going to pick up. Just haven't seen them so far. As a Democrat, Curtis, you a little frightened yet about the possibility of a Sri Tanadar nominee for governor?
Well, first of all, I think that any Democratic governor would be better than Bill Schuette or Brian Kelly or, God forbid, Patrick Kolbeck. So, I mean, I think we're going to be okay there. But listen, I think Sri's numbers are a mile wide, an inch deep. I spent a lot of money on ads. I'm sure that lots of people can pronounce his name at this point, but I don't think there's a whole lot of depth to that. I think at the end of the day, when people know about Gretchen's record and her being a fighter in the Senate and what she's fought for, that she'll win. I have a hard time believing that Democrats will choose somebody who's a businessman after watching Donald Trump and Rick Snyder run government. So I just don't think it's going to happen that way.
Do you think she should start advertising? I mean, is it time for her to sort of start spread it out a little bit?
I'm not her campaign manager. I don't run campaigns for a living, although I have done a lot of that kind of work. I think that there's already some of the web stuff is starting to go. Now they're actually starting to spend some money on that. Well, they probably have to amp up the social media buys and those things. I think it's a little silly to be spending that much money on the air right now. I think you got to hold that money as much as possible. And I think Democrats are best off if we hold as much of it as possible towards the end and more importantly for the general. So I think somebody that wants to not just win the Democratic nomination but wins the race for governor is holding off a little while longer. And I think that probably makes sense.
Curtis Sertel, state senator from the city of East Lansing, 23rd district. Paul, hold on, we can't let this go.
Yeah, Paul DeWeese. Yeah, I knew there was going already. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your thoughts here? Paul DeWeese, candidate, state house.
I mean, listen, I don't know what Paul DeWeese is, and I'm not sure if Paul DeWeese knows what Paul DeWeese is. You know, he was originally a conservative Republican who was testified for right to life as a doctor and was one of the heads of the charter school movement. Then he was a moderate Republican when he ran against Virge Monaro for Senate. Then he moved up north and ran as a conservative Republican against Wahlberg. Then he moved back to Ingham County and decided he was a Democrat and endorsed Obama. Then he pulled to run against me. He paid
as
for
a Democrat.
No, as a Republican.
Oh, is that right?
So I called Paul up 4 years ago, and I said, I just got a poll. I got a bunch of people call me and said that you're polling against me. You know, we're trying to keep this seat, you know, the primary out, but I'd like to have a conversation with you. He goes, oh, don't worry about it. If I'm running, I'm running as a Republican. And I said, I thought you were a Democrat. He's like, yeah, but Obamacare really made me mad, so. I'm now a Republican again. I said, okay, that's weird. He never filed. Then I'm pretty sure he was convicted of a crime last year, and I can't remember exactly something about his neuropathy
Medicaid
clinic.
Fraud.
Medicaid fraud. Which
and then opioid.
Always down. Good for a candidate. And then now he's running as a Democrat at Lansing. So I have no idea who Paul DeWeese is, and I don't even think Paul DeWeese knows who Paul DeWeese is, and somebody should probably ask him at some point. But I don't have a whole lot of fear of him winning a Democratic primary at Lansing.
Senator Curtis Sertel from East Lansing, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Well, you know, I always like to try to get the quote of the day. So that's Senator Kinesic and I keep a tally board in our offices. So I'd love to be ahead this year, so that'd be great.
And thank you to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, for John Roerink, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.